Manat Digital Podcast. We have Jordan Bromley, one of our attorneys from Manat Phelps & Phillips.
Hello.
He's an expert in all things music, all things legal. So welcome, Jordan.
Thank you.
We also have Ned Sherman, who is counsel and director on our Manat Digital team, and I'm Skip Garrett, senior analyst. So Jordan, introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and what you do here at Manat.
Okay. I've been here since 2004. It was my only real job. Before that, I was waiting tables and was a barback, a busboy, a music manager, which got me into music. When I was in college, I started a nonprofit called the Hip Hop Congress, which got me involved with artists. And then after that, before that, I was promoting shows on the college campus at USC. And I got into law solely because of the job. I don't think I'd be a music lawyer. If I wasn't a music lawyer. I went to law school to just literally because I hated my job, current job. And I liked school. And I got a scholarship. So kind of fell into this, but you know, I've been doing it now for 13 years, and you know, really like it.
Did law school at USC as well?
No, in Brooklyn Law.
Brooklyn Law,
yeah.
Okay, cool. And so how do you transition from being a manager and being an attorney? Like, what's the thought in your mind of wanting to make that conscious career move?
It really wasn't conscious. I went to law school thinking I'd buy 3 years of time to start my record label, which we did. It was a Bay Area rap label. It still exists. And we released a record when I was a third-year law student that did very well and kind of got the label off the ground. The thing that really did it for me was walking into my internship, my second year in law school at a law firm in New York. All they did was music law, and I walked in, and within 2 minutes, I realized that this is what I want. Just a bay full of activity, offices full of attorneys on the phone, making deals, and it just really resonated with me. It was something I wanted to do. And I remember telling my dad when I came back home for the holidays that this was it for me.
You know, there are a lot of different strands of music lawyers. What's a day in the life like for you, and what do you guys focus on here at Manat?
We're kind of like general counsels for talent. So there's a lot of strategy, a lot of deal making, a lot of relationship building and leveraging, and just a lot of volume. I mean, I would say my team handles 150 deals at one time. We close 10 to 20 deals a week and open 10 to 20 deals a week. So it's really a lot of management of volume of activity and making sure that nothing falls through the cracks, that we're thinking strategically through each deal, not only as a deal on its own, but as a deal as part of the entire ecosystem of the artist or company, as the case may be. There is no one day that's the same as the last. The only thing that's consistent are the emails that just never stop. I think people need to relearn how to talk on the phone, because we'll have back and forth on email that could be taken care of in like a 14-second phone conversation. So hopefully the art of talking on the phone will be remembered.
So you started a record label back in, what year was that?
2002.
And so today we're at 2018, where we see, you know, the music industry has changed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Being an attorney, you see all of the deals and all of the terms and conditions of this new landscape. What's the biggest difference you've seen in how business is done in the music industry 2002 when you had a label to today?
Well, there are no physical record stores anymore. When I was releasing a record, I called every record store in the country, and we drop shipped units to every store. We actually basically created our own distribution network, which evaporated over the course of the last 10 years. The other thing is people are making and releasing music a lot quicker. So there's a lot more clearance conversations, work, strategy involved in that. it's a more fluid process. It's more catch and release in terms of creativity rather than sitting on something for 2-3 years and making it perfect. There's a lot more experimentation and evolution in the artistry. And there's a lot more flexibility. Back in 2002, there was only a few gatekeepers that could release music for you or help you create it. And now anyone with a computer can make and distribute music throughout the world.
A pretty big event this week, you know, in terms of the music, overall music industry, Spotify now worth more than all three of the major labels combined.
Mm-hmm.
Had its IPO. What are your thoughts on Spotify and, you know, what this means for the industry?
I don't know what the IPO means for the industry. I didn't know that they're worth now more than the three major labels combined. That's fascinating and amazing. I think Spotify, while they weren't the first streaming service, they were certainly the trailblazer and clearly the market leader. They helped us to create a value proposition to consumers that was accepted. I think that in the 90s and the 80s, we had a value proposition that was forced on consumers in terms of having to buy an entire CD or tape in order to get the song you like. And then the consumers flipped that and forced a value proposition on us, which is, no, we're just going to take it. And now there's a true kind of parity between the creator and the consumer that's been accepted on a global level. So I think that's largely in part to Spotify. And I'm excited to see what happens.
I mean, I guess you hear people now talking, not just in the music industry. I mean, you look at kind of what Netflix has done, how it's disrupted the overall video, television, movie business, and the role of distribution. I mean, arguably, I've heard a lot of people saying it these days, distribution is now king.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts on that? I mean, where's the next big disruption going to come, you know, in the industry?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like everything's so disruptive that to use the word disruptive is almost just common. It's like to disrupt the disruption, it's like, what's the next calming force in a way? There's just been so much change in the last 5, 6, 7 years, and it's great. It's important, and, you know, I think change comes slowly but happens quickly. It's hard fought, but I think quickly won once the tide turns. And for us in music streaming, that was 2017. I don't know. I hope we stabilize. I hope there is no more further disruption in the recorded space, because we're just wrapping our heads around what we're looking at this point.
So the Music Modernization Act was a piece of legislation that's grassed headlines. You did a thought piece on it in Billboard. Can you kind of explain that to the listeners in layman's terms, what that means, and then how that affects artists?
Yeah. So it essentially sets up a body that licenses and collects money on streaming income. And I believe it's digital downloads as well, but I'm not entirely sure. But the main thrust has been on streaming. It creates a database of mechanical rights in the United States that allows digital service providers like Spotify, Apple, Amazon, Tidal to effectively identify the songwriters and pay out. And it also creates a bucket of income for unclaimed songs that is controlled by the body and not the digital service providers. So the money is in the hands of the creators or the publishers rather than the DSPs. And that body is run largely by the writers and publishers.
So it's giving ownership to the creators for essentially level setting that process, or?
It's mainly giving it to the publishers.
To the publishers.
But at least it's putting it in the hands of the music business, right, and not in the hands of the tech companies. Mm. It's an admin thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's largely boring, right, but it solves a lot of problems with respect to the mass licensing of millions of songs. My question then becomes, who administers that? How do they properly administer it? How do they make sure that money is properly collected and paid? Mm-hmm. It's a huge undertaking.
So then along the lines of publishing and catalogs, we've seen a lot of M&A, a lot of companies buying catalogs, mm-hmm. a lot of companies buying other companies that own catalog. What does that look like for the future of the industry? And are we seeing artists essentially lose ownership of their IP as a result of this M&A activity?
No. I mean, this is artists who have previously lost ownership, and these publishers are just selling what they have to other publishers. It's some companies getting rich and selling to another company that, you know, has a fund. although some artists are doing it, you know, a lot of the times what we've done in the past is you build up your catalog until you're about 60 or 70, and then you have a big event where you sell it at a multiple, and that's your nest egg for your kids, their inheritance, your retirement fund, stuff like that. One thing that is new is younger writers are starting to do that, where they sell their catalog up until a certain point, make a bunch of money from it, and then go invest that to make more money. So that's a new thing we're seeing. But it's totally elective. It's not necessary. You can keep it and keep the income stream, or you can have a huge cash infusion and lose the eventual right to receive income on that. I think this is a great time to sell publishing assets. I think the market's inflated. I think we're in a bubble that'll last for a couple more years. And I think the new Copyright Royalty Board decision about raising mechanical royalty rates will help people sell their catalogs at a higher price.
In terms of the overall industry, I mean, we've seen some kind of remarkable growth lately. How do the artists cash in on this?
Well, they, I mean, back to your point of distribution being king, they have the direct distribution ability. They don't have to go through a label. They can do smarter, richer deals with labels or on their own or through financing. They cash in the fact that, to the extent that they can employ good strategy with the options they have at their disposal. That's where we've become very helpful. I think, you know, they can literally cash in on selling a catalog if they want to. Touring is strong. For some artists, merchandise, sales of merchandise is very strong. A lot of artists are starting to spread their arms into other areas of business. Different countries and cultures. There's beginning to become thriving markets for music in countries that we used to write off. You know, the MENA territory, India, China, South Korea. It's the world is opening up, and there's a lot of opportunity there for a lot of artists.
So you mentioned artists having other opportunities and growing their business. What in your position, your role, how can you assist them in doing that? Here at Manat Digital, we are, you know, passionate about helping entrepreneurs grow and expand their business and do business development and strategy and positioning. What are your thoughts on helping artists do that?
I mean, it's a natural evolution of the musical craft. You know, artists are running businesses now, and they're able to, you know, hitch their wagon to the music sales and the touring and the traditional forms of making money through music. But then there's also international expansion, technology offerings, you know, various ways to pair up with other areas of not only law but opportunity that, you know, Manat has to offer. So it's just, you know, using our entire team instead of just me, doing a project with the consulting group and learning your audience, talking to our real estate company, our real estate lawyers about opportunities, our digital media lawyers about opportunities, we have a MENA group in DC run by the former head of the African National Bank. I think that's what they call it. So there's plenty of opportunity in-house to, like, you know, figure out how to reach out broader than music.
So, you know, looking forward the next 3 to 5 years, what do you see? What are you concerned about? What opportunities do you see? Or you know, how do you feel?
I think we're gonna hone in on the streaming as the consumption leader, making it fair for everyone. I'm excited to see if new streaming companies emerge. This could be looked at 10 years from now, looking back, could be looked at the first internet bubble, where you've got like CompuServe and Prodigy and instead of Facebook and Google.
Yeah.
You know, Amazon kind of held out through the whole thing, but they were unprofitable for almost a decade, I think. So I'm interested in seeing this particular area of the market grow and evolve. And I'm excited for everyone else in our business to understand streaming and the streaming economy like we do, so we don't have to explain it to everybody all the time. And I think people are. I think it just took a minute for us to realize, okay, this is what we should focus on. This is where the future is. Let's understand it fully. And I'm finding more and more of my colleagues are really getting it and understanding it, which is a good thing. I think it's important for us all to really get what we're looking at in order to make it fair.
So probably just a couple more questions along those lines. The media is really big about, you know, who's going to win the streaming wars. Is it going to be Apple? Is it going to be Amazon? Is it going to be Tidal, Spotify?
Mm-hmm.
Is it fair to look at it that way? Or should we just, you know, should the tidal rise, no pun intended,
yeah,
the tide rise and all the boats rise?
I don't know if there's just going to be one.
Right.
There's different offerings. People like Apple because they have an account with Apple. People like Spotify because they love the playlisting abilities. People like Tidal because there's a better, I guess, quality of music, and they get those exclusives from the artists that own it. I mean, it's just personal preference. I don't just want one store to go to get groceries. You know, I go to Trader Joe's for cheap wine, and then I go to Gelson for expensive fish. You know, it just depends on what you want. My question is, will the current players be even part of the streaming wars in 10 years? You know, what's going to happen? Because the landscape we see now will not be the landscape we see in 10 years. So I'm just excited to see that. You know, as a music lawyer, we get to excitedly watch because we don't really have much of a stake in anyone winning or losing. It's just watching the economy grow is exciting.
Well, Jordan, thank you for this. This was great. Learned a
no
lot.
No problem. My pleasure.
So this was Manat Digital's podcast. I'm Skip Garrett here with Ned Sherman. It's Jordan Bromley. Jordan, thank you.
Thanks guys.
Yeah, appreciate it.